Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Derrick, Minister of 12th Hour Apostolic Center, Assembly Congregation, I'm about the 12th Hour. And the orientation today is November the 4th, 2023, and it is the 21st day of Bull 2027. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, My Hope is Built on Nothing Less. Is built on nothing less than Yeshua's blood and righteousness. I've been a trespasser, sinner's friend, but holy tuned on Yeshua's name. And Yeshua's all in righteousness, all the world is seeking sin. Oh, the ground is sinking sand. When darkness fills his lovely field, harvest on his unchanging grace. And every high and shiny veil, my anchor holds within the veil. And Yeshua's all in rock and sand, all of the ground is sinking sand, all of the ground is sinking sand. His hope is covered in his blood, support me in the warming flood. All around my soul did rain, within is all my hope to stay. On the rock I stand, all of the ground is sinking sand. All of the ground is sinking sand. When he shall come with trumpet sound, oh, may I then in him be found. Blessed in his righteousness alone, helpless to stand before the throne. And watch with his heart, it's rock I stand, out of his ground, it's sinking sand. All of the ground is sinking sand. Okay, the second temple. This is a number, take number two. In the erecting of the second temple, Haggai and Zechariah prophesied and strengthened the hands of the people by the word of the Yahweh. For the writings of both the prophets bear evidence in every line that the perfect fulfillment of their prophecy is to be realized in the last days of this world's history, as they have interwoven these predictions with the construction of the second temple. It is obvious that the literal model of the stately edifice has a spiritual meaning for the Church of Israel and the closing work of the gospel. Okay, or in the closing work of the teaching of the plan of salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant. That's the gospel. For Zechariah, looking forward unto the time of the spiritual temple, the last section of the church, and its construction says, Behold, the man whose name is the branch, and he shall grow up out of his place, and he shall build the temple. Now we all know that this branch is Yeshua, the Son. So he's going to come to this earth, he's going to come into his kingdom, and he's going to grow up out of his place in this kingdom. So it says that he's going to build a temple of the Yahweh. Even he shall build a temple of the Yahweh, and he shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne, and he shall be a priest upon his throne. And the council of the peace shall be between them both, and they that are far off shall come and build in the temple of the Yahweh. And you shall know that I, the Yahweh, Yahshua, this is talking about the Son now, Yahshua of the host, has sent me unto you. Zechariah 6:12, 13:15. He shall bear the glory. Unto Yahshua belongs the glory of the redemption for the fallen race. Unto him that loved us and washed us from our sins in his own blood. Unto him be glory and dominion forever and ever. Revelation 1:5-6. He shall sit and rule upon his throne. And he shall be a priest upon his throne. Now, get this. Yahshua's taking a new position here on earth. He's come to his seventh throne, his seventh sanctuary, the throne. Yahshua comes in, that's in the prophecy of Ezekiel 1:26. He comes in that traveling throne, and he takes his place upon his new throne, a stationary throne in the kingdom of David, right here on earth. And he reigns in as a king, and he reigns as a priest at the same time. In other words, he's officiating in the sanctuary still for the sins of people. Even after Yahshua comes and sits upon the throne here on earth, he's going to sit as a king and a priest at the same time. Zechariah 6:13. For Yahshua, who is the faithful witness and the first begotten of the dead and the prince of the kings of the earth, Revelation 1:5, he shall be a priest upon his throne. It is obvious that the time predicted sometime after the crucifixion and before the probation has closed, for he is a priest. Yahshua the branch shall grow up out of his place. That is, he was to spring up from the Jewish nation, and he shall build the temple of the Yahshua. Now I'd like to point out, when Yahshua came the first time, he came as a babe in a manger. And he lived 30 years on this earth, and nobody knew anything about him. But his mother and his brothers and sisters, and his father. He grew up out of his place. It took him 30 years back then to grow up out of his place from where he was born. But today he's going to come back again, and he spends another 30 years, and he's going to grow up out of his place as a branch that builds the temple. And this is a spiritual temple. Therefore, the temple that he shall build could not have been the literal temple in the ancient Jerusalem, favor the temple that he is to build after his birth. Okay. So when Yahshua is born again, and the message, which he was born again in the message of 1970, and they that are far off shall come and build in the temple of the Yahshua, or the temple of Yahweh. As this was untrue with the literal temple, the words must apply unto the antitypical one. At that time the prophet says, and many nations shall be joined unto the Yeshua, the Son, in that day, and shall be my people, Zechariah 2:11. And that day, that is in the time of the loud cry, which would be in the 12th parabolic hour, the harvest time of Earth's history, this is the time that we're in right now, a great multitude shall be converted unto the church. Pay attention to this word, converted. Pay close attention, put that in your mind. Because there's a difference between the unconverted and the unclean. There's two different classes of people, but they are in the church. There's your unconverted, there's your converted, and there's your unclean. In Zechariah 13:8, it is stated that one third of the inhabitants will come. Now pay attention to this. One third of the inhabitants of the earth, of the world, will come. And they are the ones who shall build in the temple of the Yahweh, of which the little one was a type. The little one was Solomon's temple, the first one built, son of David. For Zechariah then saw the powers that had scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem, the type also, the antitype, symbolized by the four horns. Immediately afterwards he saw the same horn as the four carpenters. Read Zechariah 1:18-21, representing the agencies used by the Yahweh in the restoring of his people and the house of his worship, both in the type and the antitype. That is, the Gentiles who scattered the church in the type shall also come and build in the antitype as the same. Okay. New subtitle. The literal and the spiritual distinction between the two temples. For the religious services in both temples were executed in the same manner, but in the structural magnificence, both internal and external, Solomon's temple, comparatively speaking, was by far the greatest. But the Yeshua, by the mouth of the Haggai the prophet, asked, those who were then engaged in the construction of the house of Yahweh, who is left among you that saw this house, Solomon's temple, in her first glory, and how do you see it now? Is it not in your eyes in comparison of it as nothing? For the glory of this latter house shall be greater than of the former, saith the Yeshua of the host. That's the Son. And in this place will I give peace, saith Yeshua of the host, Haggai 2:3-9. For the literal grandeur of the second temple, in comparison with the first, was as nothing. But the word says, the glory of this latter house shall be greater than the former. Literally, this was untrue. Therefore, the glory of these two temples in comparison with each other is not in their literal, visible form, but rather in their typical spiritual standing. Consequently, both temples cannot typify the same period of what they call the antitypical apostolic era. The Hallows use the word Christian era here. But we're going to do better than that. We're going to bring it up today. Apostolic means true Israelites. Christian, the word Christian don't mean true Israelites. It just means an amalgamation of many different kinds of people from many different kinds of religions coming together as one, including the Catholic Church in their midst, for one distinctly different from the other. Since this is true, then the type shows that the Apostolic Church in this instance is divided into two sections. That's a true Jewish church. So, then, in the type, the second temple denotes that the latter section of the church is to be by far the greater, which in the comparison the former stands as nothing. These two sections of the church history were also pointed out in the vision on Patmos. Under John, it was shown that the true spiritual church of the Yahweh in all ages and a symbol of a woman, under her were given two wings of a great eagle, that she should fly into the wilderness for 1260 days or years. The wilderness represents the dark ages, in which time she was out of the civilization from 538 A.D. to 1798 A.D., 1260 years. Therefore, this prophetic period of the 1260 years split the true church into the two sessions, namely from the crucifixion unto the 538 A.D., and from 1798 A.D. until the end of time. Thus, the first session, or as it is called, the Apostolic Congregation, was typified by the First Temple, and the last session by the Second Temple. This is not saying that Yahweh had no true people between the years of 538 A.D. and 1798 A.D., but the word says, she is nourished for a time and times and a half a time, Revelation 12:14. For the lesson taught here is that the first section of the church in the first few centuries was endowed with the true Sabbath daily, hyphen daily, and the sanctuary truth. In other words, the sanctuary truth in full operation. But prior to 538 A.D., the truth of the sanctuary in the full operation was trodden underfoot, Daniel 8:12-13. For the second section, after the fulfillment of the 1260-year period, he noticed that she was again to be endowed with the truth of the sanctuary and the full operation that was cast onto the ground. And the reformation between these two sections from 538 A.D. to 1798 A.D. of the church or woman was to prepare the way for the return of the restoration of the truth. Well, the Seventh-day Adventist Church came on the scene in 1844. They didn't restore the truth. They announced the 2300-year prophecy. They understand how they announced all the prophecies that was to begin then and to operate from 1844 on. But the truth of the sanctuary and the full operation with the daily, they didn't have light on, so they couldn't teach that. For both temples, by which these two sections were typified, represent a worship with the Sabbath and the sanctuary truth. First temple literally greater, but the second spiritually. There was something glorious with both temples, and the greatness of the one was as nothing in comparison with the other. For the first visibly exceeded the second, and the second spiritually exceeded the first, but the glorious gift unto both was unsurpassable. As the one represents the earlier apostolic congregation, and the other the last section of the same church, it is evident that both sections were endowed with the great glory, that the glory of the early house of Israel was literal, and of the latter spiritual, according to the text. For the early apostolic church was literally greater, because the Yahshua as the headstone of the corner appeared at that time in his visible human form. This literal magnificence of the Solomon's temple was a perfect symbol, that the top reveals that the glory of the early church was as nothing in comparison with the latter section of the same church. Therefore, the visible presence of the Yahshua in his human form in the early church was as nothing in comparison with his invisible presence in the closing work of the gospel church. We think of the wonderful miracle about the casting out of the devils and the healing of the sick and the raising of the dead. We marvel as we think of his resurrection, ascension, and of the glorious demonstration on the day of the Pentecost, that all these wonders will be as nothing in the comparison with the divine manifestation of the greater splendor in the harvest time. So let us not suppose that when the Yahshua appears in the clouds, the infirmities of the saints are to be removed. This work must be done previous to that time, after which immortality shall be granted. He that believeth in me, the works that I do, said the Yahshua, shall he do. Also, and greater works than thee shall he do. John 14:12. For the perfect fulfillment of these words are yet future and must be fulfilled before his second advent. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and the mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory, 1 Corinthians 15:53-54. And it says, therefore, in the time of the loud cry, miracles are wrought, the sick will be healed, the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the deaf shall hear, the tongue of the dumb loose, and the lame shall leap for joy. What a glorious sight, those who have never seen light, to behold the glory of the Yahshua. They who have never heard a sound now listen unto the glorious melodies of the angels, harps, and the singing of the saints. What a thrill, what bliss, and Yahweh shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more a death, neither sorrow, nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. Revelation 21:4. Behold, I will show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we must all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. Then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. 1 Corinthians 15:51-54. As the living saints witness the dead of all ages rising from their dusty abyss, it will bring joy indescribable. Then to behold friends and loved ones as they meet each other, clothed in their glorious incorruptible bodies, marching through space via the sinless planets, and finally into the heaven of heavens. What a glorious train of the immortal beings, saints and angels, and the King of Kings, Yahshua the host, the everlasting Father, it says Yahshua the Son is the everlasting Father. Well, that's a misprint in Isaiah. We're going to do it right. It says, for the Yahshua the host as the Son of the everlasting Father Yahweh, and as the Prince of Peace. Yahshua is the Prince of Peace. In the midst of them, swiftly flying from the sin-cursed earth unto the center of sinners in but 7 days, while it would take millions of years to make a trip of such incomprehensible distance, can you perceive of an object moving with such tremendous velocity? Yahweh forbid that we should rob ourselves of the glory like this. An hour's time lived in heaven without sin, pain or tears, fear or death, is worth more than 1,000 years in the tents of wickedness. Now, brethren, for the obeying of the word of Yahweh and be true unto the principle for your own good is not asking too much of you. Will you let self and sin rob you of a crown of life? Your human wisdom and worldly knowledge will prove to be as black as darkness itself if you should allow the wily foe to rob you of the celestial bliss that should be yours throughout the ceaseless ages of eternity. Now, that scene that Vitalis just depicted to you about marching through space to that eternal city in heaven. But that's going to take place right here on earth before probation closes in the 12th hour. And then it's going to be repeated after probation closes, after everybody's resurrected here, and the earth has been restored like the Garden of Eden again, and then he takes all the ones. Then he takes them and translates them into the everlasting kingdom of his dear Son, that's in Colossians 1:12, and he translates them then to heaven. First they're restored in the everlasting kingdom of heaven here on earth, and then they are taken to the eternal city. Though the early apostolic congregation suffered terrible persecution, she prospered wonderfully. for the 3,000 converted on the day of the Pentecost, as such as should be saved, was marvelous to behold. But the steady growth of the first section of the church in comparison with the second and last is to be of nothing according unto the type. Therefore, the same is proven by the prophetic word of Yahweh to the prophet Zechariah. And as the prediction was interwoven with the construction of the second temple, or with the type of the second section of the church, of which we speak at this particular time, the application of the following scriptures must be correct. Sing and rejoice, O daughter of the Zion, for lo, I come. Now, with this daughter of Zion, the house of David, the kingdom of David, with this daughter of Zion here in the 12th hour, for lo, I come, and I will dwell in the midst of thee. Now, here's Yahshua's second coming, right here. In these last days, in the 12th parabolic hour, it's his second coming. It says so right here. He's going to come and he's going to dwell in the midst of this purified kingdom of David that he sits upon the throne of, and he's going to take his throne up upon the David's throne in this kingdom. And many nations shall be joined unto the Yahshua in that day, and shall be my people. And I will dwell in the midst of thee. This thee is the house of David, tribe of Judah, lawgiver. The 144,000 are the prophets, priests, and kings in this governmental body governing this house of David. And shall be my people. And I will dwell in the midst of thee. Zechariah 2:10-11. Yea, many people and strong nations shall come for the seeking of Yahshua the host and Jerusalem, the church without reference to location, and to pray before the Yahshua, or pray before the Yahweh the Father. Zechariah 8:22. Therefore, thy gates shall be opened continually. They shall not be shut day nor night, that men may bring unto thee the forces, and the forces means the wealth of the Gentiles, and that their kings may be brought. Isaiah 60 verse 11. And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith the Yahshua, two parts then shall be cut off in all the land, and die, and the third shall be left therein. And I will bring the third part through the fire, and will refine them as silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. For they shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people, and it shall be. And it shall say to Yahshua, the Yahweh is my father, Yahweh, my father. Zechariah 13:8-9. What is 3,000 converts in one day in comparison to one-third of the people saved of this present generation, gathered and during the last hours? Now look at Vicky Hall saying hours. No, they're gathered in the last hour, the 12th parabolic hour of the probationary time. Vicky Hall makes it sound like there's several hours, prophetic hours to the probationary time. There's only 1 hour, and that's the 12th hour. Truly then, it can be said that the glory of the first temple, of Solomon's temple, or the first section of the house of Israel, was as nothing in comparison with the second. And we represent the second, the everlasting kingdom of David, Daniel 2:44-45, that set up in these last days in the 12th parabolic hour, with the last section of the house of Israel, and the time of the loud cry, is indeed the harvest time and the end of the world. So you see this? If V.T. Hall had put that 12th parabolic hour in there and taught it like it was, then you'd know all along while reading this that he would have had it right. But he says probationary hours. Okay, he says, for the early apostolic congregation at the cross was a converted righteous church. Nevertheless, the tares and the wheat were to grow together until the harvest. Matthew 13:30. These words, until the harvest, cannot be mistaken. Therefore, at the commencement of the harvest in the 12th parabolic hour of these last days, and the judgment of the living town, the second phase of the judgment that was started in 1844 by Ellen G. White, the judgment of the dead was the first phase, Daniel 7:9-11. The judgment of the living is Daniel 7:13, the second phase. 158 years apart, those two judgments takes place. Thus, the church in the time of the loud cry is to be a pure and holy church without spot or wrinkle or any such sin. A church without guile, if the foregoing statement is correct, then the same must be found in the prophetic word of the Yahweh. My brethren, I beg of you, hear the voice of the Good Shepherd, awake, awake. Put on thy strength, O Zion. Now this is present tense right now. Put on, O Zion, put on the beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city. Sister White made a statement. And the Great Controversy, they took it out. She says the Seventh-day Adventist Church represents the holy city today, the spiritual Israel of today. For henceforth, from now on, there shall no more come unto thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. Shake thyself from the dust, arise and sit on thy throne, O Jerusalem. Loose thyself from the band of thy neck, O captive daughter of Zion. Isaiah 51:2. As these words are so plain, how can we doubt or misconstrue their meaning? It must be that the church of Yahweh is asleep in the dust. Well, that's where the Seventh-day Adventist church is at right now. She's sound asleep in the dust. Thy Yahweh is calling thee, O Zion. This is Mount Zion at the 12th hour. That's his Yahweh's church. That is the only object on earth, which is the everlasting kingdom of David, Daniel 2:44-45, that is set up in this 12th parabolic hour, which he bestows his supreme regard, is in captivity. She is bound by her neck to men of good words and fair speeches. Hear the words of the Yahweh, O Zion. This is Mount Zion, 12th hour. This is talking about the house of David. Arise and sit on thy throne. You go find that song in Luke 1:32 and Isaiah 9:6-8. It's the throne of David. For thou shalt judge nations. Why, that's in this 12th parabolic hour. So this gathering and sanctifying of the saints, they got a work to do after gathered and sanctified. They've got to sit on thrones judging nations. Why make a flesh thy arm? Is not thy Yahweh able to save thee? Is not the word of thy Yahweh quick and powerful, sharper than a two-edged sword, piercing even unto the dividing asunder of the soul and spirit, and a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart? For Zion's sake, this is Mount Zion at the 12th hour, house of David, the everlasting kingdom of heaven here on earth, with Yahshua sitting upon the throne of it, will I not hold my peace. And for Yahshua's sake, I will not rest until the righteousness thereof go forth as the brightness and the salvation. That's the teaching of the Father of the salvation, the brother of the everlasting covenant of Hebrews chapter 10, verse 19 and 20. Thereof, as a lamp that burneth. My brethren, go through the gates. Prepare ye the way of the people. Cast up the highway. Gather out the stones. Lift up a standard for the people. And that standard is a sanctuary system restored with the creation calendar. Isaiah 62, 1 and 10. For the remnant of Israel, of the 144,000, shall not do iniquity. They come out of the Seventh-day Adventist Church as the first fruits harvest in the 12th parabolic hour. Nor speak lies, neither shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouth, for they shall feed and lie down, and none shall make them afraid. Zephaniah 3:13. In that day shall there be upon the bells of the horses those that carry the gospel and teaching the family of salvation, the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, holiness unto the Yahshua and the apostles, and whose possession is with the truth, and the Yahshua's house shall be like the bowls before the altar, pure and undefiled. Yea, every part in Jerusalem, that is in the purified church, and in Judah, that's the two tribes kingdom of David, lawgiver, the leading part of the church. So Judah, that's who we are, represent. We're the leading part of the 144,000 that makes up the whole church. Shall be holiness unto the Yahshua of the host. And all they that sacrifice, that means makes offerings, that comes and worships in the temple, shall come and take of them and see, that means to boil, that means that they're going to do something with heating something up, therein they are ministers in the sacred things. And in that day there shall be no more of the Canaanite, the unconverted. That's your terrorist. That's your Ishmaelite. That's your Esauite. And the house of the Yahshua of the host. Zechariah 14, 20, 21. This is the church that is represented in the Revelation 12, 17. Which keeps the commandments of Yahweh and have the testimony, that is the sanctuary system restored with the daily intact of the Yahshua. And they have to have a creation calendar before they can restore the sanctuary system. They have to know the true time to keep all of these here statutes and judgments and precepts. This is for that woman represents the church as a body. For the remnant of her seed, which is her Gentiles, that are waiting out there in the isles all over the world and all foreign nations, her seed, Invita Allah says that's 144,000. Well, the remnant of her seed starts out the seed, the remnant of the seed of the Adventist Church is 144,000. But the remnant of the remnant is the Gentiles and these nations. Because the 144,000 are commissioned to go and get their brethren. Isaiah 66, 16 through 20. 22. That against whom the dragon makes war. For the war is waged against them because they are the earthly leaders and founders of the movement. Okay. Of the what movement? This last movement, as pointed out by that fifth group of laborers that is told in, at the 11th hour in Matthew 20, verse 6, of her seed, signifies that they are a part of the woman, or in other words, as 144,000, and in the great multitude is but one movement, one family. And that's a movement that the house of David is in charge of right now. Okay, for the saints of this holy church, the benediction is pronounced. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have a right to the tree of life and may enter in through the gates and to the city. Revelation 22:14. For the Jacob, as the father and the type of the Israel, as the true, is with the dream of on the way unto Padanaram. And behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached unto heaven. And behold, the angels of the Yahweh ascending and descending on it. And he was afraid and said, how dreadful is this place? This is none other than the house. It should have said, this is none other than the house of Yahweh. And this is the gate of the heaven. Genesis 28:12-17. For the Jacob's dream was prophetic of a time when there will be a complete connection and constant communication with heaven and earth. In the time of the loud cry in the 12th periodic hour, the judgment of the living, the harvest time of earth's history, of the third angel's message, it says here in the harvest time, unto that glorious purified church these words apply. This is the house of the Yahweh and the gate of the heaven. Only by the gospel proclamation through the spiritual house with the 144,000 at the head of it can Yahweh save his people. There is to be one fold, one shepherd, one Yahshua, one truth to embrace, one salvation to accept, one road to travel, one gate to pass through, one train to take, and one time to depart. One heaven to enter, one people, and one holy family. There can be no other way. It is impossible to give any idea of the experience of the people of the Yahweh who shall be alive upon the earth when the celestial glory and a repetition of the persecutions of the past are blended. They will walk in the light proceeding from the throne of the Yahweh by the means of the angels. There will be constant communication between the heaven and the earth. And that's just a quote by Ellen G. White, Testimonies, Volume 9, page 16. For the time for the building of the antipodal temple, this is the church. We partially explained that the two literal temples successfully built in the ancient Jerusalem were types of the two sections of the apostolic church, or the antitypical apostolic church, for the wide literal and spiritual contrast of these two typical structures was explained comparatively with the type and the antitype, though we should have greatly enlarged on the subject. We have eliminated excessive reading by briefly stating the facts, endeavoring to paint a more comprehensive picture of this most vital lesson unto Christendom. For the question before us is, when will the antitype meet its perfect fulfillment? In the preceding paragraph, it was explained that the first section of the apostolic congregation of it, with the 12 apostles leading it, ended in 538 A.D., and the second must commence after 1798 A.D., at which time the woman is supposed to return from the wilderness. For a first study of the type, is the only possible way to clear the truth, not only of the foregoing question, but also of the following one. If the woman is to return from the wilderness and to the vineyard, civilization, after the end of the prophetic period of the 1260 years that ended in 1798, was transpired to prove that she came back in that year. As the imprisonment and death of the Pope answers one side of the question and clears the end of the prophetic period, where is the sign to show that the woman returned from the wilderness? If she accepted and the interpretation of the woman is if the accepted interpretation of the woman is as a symbol of the church, and if she was in the wilderness from 538 A.D. until 1798 A.D., what about the four great denominations that were raised up prior to that time, namely the Lutherans in 1500, Presbyterians in 1543, the Methodists in 1725, and the Baptists in 1810 by Alexander Campbell? Were they not the woman church? For the Bible students have failed to clear this mystery because of their lack of the light on the word of Yahweh, for a great searchlight by the power of the Spirit shining through the type is the only medium that can remove the obstruction and clear the way for an understanding of these and many other mysteries that are considered incomprehensive and that baffle the human mind. Therefore, the temple type of the church, the woman, is the only channel by which these questions can be answered. This brings in by studying this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call and number 11. Click on our audio archives to hear this and more. We're going to close now with a song, and then we're going to start number 2 on our second sermon. For the temples and the woman, let us continue on with our sermon. We have 7 more minutes left. For the temples and the woman represent the church as a body. Or in other words, the symbol of the woman is a revelation of the types, temples. And the temples are symbolical are the symbolical properties of the woman, the church. It will be noticed that the separate members of the church are represented by the composite substance of the temple, as the lively stones are built up as a spiritual house, as an holy priesthood unto to be offered up spiritual sacrifices acceptable unto the Yahweh by the Yahshua, 1 Peter 2:5. So we being many are one body in the Yahshua, and every one members one of another, Romans 12:5. In whom all the building fitly framed together groweth unto an holy temple in the Yahshua, Ephesians 2:21. Therefore, these two temples represent both the church and Yahshua. Yahshua, our high priest, is prefigured by the chief cornerstone, and the priestly administration by the ceremonial or the sanctuary service of these two literal temples. For the earthly sanctuary service, for the salvation of the human race, and the types and symbols reveals Yahshua's administration, and the heavenly, which was made up of the two laws, namely the Ten Commandments and the ceremonial laws, that is, for the tables of the Ten Commandments were put in the ark, and the ceremonial, or the law of the Moses, was placed on the side of the ark. See Deuteronomy 10:2, 31:26. Why two laws? For the moral law points out the sin, for by the law is a knowledge of sin, Romans 3:20. For where no law is, there is no transgression, Romans 4:15. But the ceremonial law was added because of the transgression. That's Galatians 3:19. Till the seed should come to whom the promise was made, Galatians 3:19, which was the remedy to heal the sinner and set him free from the condemnation of the moral law. When the Yahshua, the seed, came, he took this law of the ordinance, the law of Moses, out of the way, nailed unto the cross, Colossians 2:14. For the earthly administration of the law of the ordinance could not give life of itself, because it was only a shadow of the truth. Therefore, at the crucifixion of Yahshua, it ceased. And the heavenly one, which was foreshadowed by the earthly, began the literal sanctuary service of both temples, were identical. Therefore, these two temples are types of the two sections of the antitypical apostolic church, with the antitypical sanctuary service made up of these two laws, the moral law, the Ten Commandments, and the ceremonial law of the statutes and judgments of the sanctuary system, the keeping of the feast days. For the first section of the apostolic church with the 12 apostles, from the crucifixion until about 538 A.D., was endowed with just such a sanctuary, that is, they had a perfect knowledge of the work in the heavenly unto that time, and their faith corresponded with his service. But in 538 A.D., the faith of this divine administration was thrown out from the church, or as Daniel puts it, trodden underfoot, Daniel 8:13, and substituted by a pagan Catholic priesthood with the pagan Catholic ceremonial and moral laws, or the papal service. and Sunday worship. Therefore, as the first temple typified the first section of the early apostolic congregation with a true sanctuary service, just so the second temple, and that's the temple that we represent right now, was prefigured the last section of the same apostolic congregation with a faith and a sanctuary service that would be identical with the first. And that antithetical sanctuary service was established in 1970 by Brother Johnson with the creation calendar, and that calendar that we're still using this very day to carry on the sanctuary system and the full operation today. This full operation of this sanctuary service has been going on for 53 years. For the foregoing explanation answers one of our questions. For the Protestant churches, which were raised up before the woman returned from the wilderness, the woman returned in 1798, the first Protestant church was raised up in 1500, 398 years before the woman returned. It says, returned from the wilderness, were in the total darkness concerning the sanctuary service. Therefore, they are not represented by the woman or by the temple. For as we stated before, the typical temples represent both sections of the church with the two divine laws, namely moral and ceremonial. Thus, the woman represents the church that keeps the commandments of Yahweh, the Ten Commandments, moral law, and have the testimony, the complete restoration of the sanctuary system, Leviticus 23, verse 1 through 44, of all the statutes and judgments of the sanctuary, as it had it under the law of Moses, and have the testimony of Yahshua, the ceremonial law of the all the plan of salvation revealed in the light of the spirit of the prophecy of Revelation 12:17. For the reformers before the woman returned from the wilderness were divinely called out as a preparatory step for the bringing her back to the vineyard, that is, for the establishing of a true and a typical temple service, true church worship. As the Solomon's temple was robbed of the sacred vessels and destroyed by the Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, ancient Babylon became a type, and had it not been so, there would have been no modern Babylon, the antitype, Revelation 18:2, as there is no controversy as to who these two Babylons are, it is not difficult to unwrap the mystery, and the proof of one will also clear the other. And the claim in this study is, if the claim in this study is correct, that the Solomon's Temple was a type of the first section of the apostolic congregation of the 12 apostles at the cross, then there must be a perfect comparison with the type and the antitype. As type destroyed type, so antitype must have destroyed antitype. That is, ancient Babylon, the type of the papacy, robbed and destroyed Solomon's Temple, the type of the early apostolic congregation, and led Israel into the captivity. This symbolical prophecy met its perfect fulfillment in 538 A.D. when the papacy went forth and destroyed the church. That's the antipical apostolic, robbed them of the sanctuary of truth, and led the followers of Yahshua into captivity, subject to the papal rule. As the true sanctuary worship was abolished by the ancient Babylon at the captivity of the Israel with the destruction of the temple, just so the papacy did away with the truth and strategically supplanted here on earth the meaning of the mediatorial work of the Yahshua in the heavenly sanctuary, of which the ceremonial system of the first temple was a type, and the period before the judgment began. Thus, the second temple represents the time while the judgment was in the session, and as the sacred vessels were carried from the sanctuary and set up in a pagan temple in a heathen land, just so the papacy trod down the truth and set up a pagan priesthood in a so-called Christian church, that was the Catholic Church calling themselves Christian, during the Dark Ages, while the woman was in the wilderness, which was typified by the heathen land Babylon. This brings in verse 56, contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close now.